Well, John, you'll know about the historical antagonism between Green Emblems here in Ireland and the Red Rose of England. Tomorrow's rugby international echoes the very real political tensions between Dublin and London. Theresa May now wants a change in the position on the backstop. That's the safety net, of course, to prevent a hard Irish border. Well, here, for the time being at any rate, there seems to be solidarity behind Dublin's refusal to change its stance. I've been to visit the street where the leaders of the 1960s Easter Rising surrendered. Now a location for Mrs. Brown's boys.
Bananas 10 for €1. All the bananas there for €1.
Right in the centre of Dublin, an old fruit and veg market has survived the threats from developers and hipsters. It's on Moore Street. And here there seems to be the same kind of enthusiasm for talking about Brexit as you'd find on the streets of Britain.
Oh, Jesus, no more about Brexit. No more. We're worn out listening to Brexit. I think it's a monster now. I just think people voted to get out, but they didn't realise all the things that was going to come. I just thought they were going to walk away and sort out our problems, and then you sort out yours, we sort out ours. It's a monster.
It's just like when two people get divorced. At the start, they can come to agreements, but towards the end, it's an absolute disaster. All the powers that be in England and Ireland can't solve it. I don't know if it's solvable.
Of course, there's a lot of people in Britain, including all the people who voted to leave in the referendum, who think that Britain will be better off by leaving the EU.
What about those who voted not to leave it? I mean, ask them the same question.
Well, at the minute, it's the one boring talk every single day, because nothing is changing. Even from Leo Varadkar, he's the same, you know. So he's like stubborn, he'd say. They're all stubborn in their own ways. But I can't see anything changing with it. I can't see them giving in to her. I really can't. So she's going to have to come up with something good.
How much do people in Dublin think about the border, really?
Well, I do. I don't know whether everyone else does. You know, we kind of always look at it that it's so far away that, you know, it's not our problem.
I'm of an age where I remember the travesties and the slaughter that went on up in Northern Ireland. And to go back to that again would be just absolute disaster for everybody concerned, everybody.
I'm heading off down O'Connell Street now on my way to meet some politicians, past where Nelson's Column used to stand until it was blown up by the IRA, through the tall fluted columns of the GPO, the General Post Office, centre of the fighting in the 1916 Irish Rising.
So we're in a building called Leinster House 2000, and it was opened...
In the Irish Parliament, I met Lisa Chambers, opposition spokesperson on Brexit. Her party, Fianna Fáil, supports government policy, but she's critical of the style of Prime Minister Leo Varadkar.
A chat and a cup of coffee throughout the day. So this is just my office here, if you want to come in. Felt there were times he was maybe using language that was inflammatory for no good reason. But at the same time, I think that there's probably guilt on both sides in that regard. And it has been a very tense time. I think it has tested patience. It has tested our relationships, you know, between the UK and Ireland.
What do you think the security implications could be if a hard border was introduced in the island of Ireland?
Myself, I spent 13 years in the Reserve Defence Forces here in the Republic, and I know many people that actually served on the border during the Troubles. And we at the time, we had 2,500 Irish troops on the border, and that wasn't that long ago. And we all know people that were impacted by that, and people living on in those border communities, they acutely remember what it was like to live in those conditions.
Historically speaking, by the way, this used to be Eamon de Valera's office. This is the 1932 annex of the Leinster House. And
Labour Party leader Brendan Howlin sits in the same 1930s office as the first president of the Irish state and echoes that spirit of opposition to the British with his support for Leo Varadkar.
How can he and the Irish government and the Irish people have confidence in negotiating with the British Prime Minister, who in open and honest fashion not only makes a solemn agreement, but largely shapes an agreement, persuades her own government to support it, and then votes against it in her own parliament?
Well, she couldn't get it through parliament, so that's why she's had to come back.
Well, I can't imagine any leader negotiating a major international agreement like that, stating to her own parliament that it was the only viable, acceptable agreement, the only deal on offer, and then subsequently deciding, well, since I can't do it, I'll try and torpedo my own deal.
It's incredibly windy down here at the port of Dublin. I'm almost being blown away. I've come to meet the chief executive of the port, which is the busiest in the Republic, to find out about their plans for Brexit.
Dublin to the Irish economy would be what the combination of Southampton, Dover, Felixstowe, London Gateway and Immingham is to the United Kingdom's economy.
Eamon O'Reilly told me that they've spent €30 million and will be ready for a no-deal Brexit, but he's worried about some British ports.
Dover has 50 times the problem that we have. They have one-tenth of the space. They've about 25 hectares for their Ro-Ro operations. We in Dublin Port have about 260 hectares in total. They have about 2.6 million accompanied units. We have about 500,000. They have 50 times the challenge that we have. So the particular problems of Dover are not the same that we have here. We're in a much more fortunate position than our colleagues in Dover.
So how are other parts of the Irish economy coping with the prospect of Brexit? Just down the road from Dublin Port, there's a garage where lots of lorry drivers fill up, and I can see trucks from all over Ireland, from Kilkenny, but from the United Kingdom as well. There's one from Dumfries over there. How prepared do you think people are?
Very unprepared. I think it's going to be a disaster. Don't think you guys know really what it's going to be like. It's going to mess up this whole port.
Should politicians here in Ireland be changing their approach, for example, on the backstop?
I don't think so. I think they're doing as good as they can. I just think the English government, there's a few people in the government, just they're kind of pushing it a lot harder. And I don't think they know what the consequences are going to be for the rest of Europe, you know.
To escape the biting cold of the Irish Sea wind, I've sought shelter next to a fire in a hotel across the road from Leinster House, the Irish Parliament, where I'm meeting Ray Bassett, a former diplomat, and a rare Irish voice who's critical of the Dublin government's policy on the backstop.
Well, clearly the government's policy hasn't worked. You know, nobody's policy has worked. We're in a mess. The Irish government and the people who are involved in it, I think at the back of it all, really expected Theresa May and the British Parliament to accept the deal. And even before the vote, the famous vote, which lost by 230, I remember speaking to one or two, and I was arguing that this was going down to a very, very heavy defeat. They were saying, no, let's not. It'll go down to a defeat. But it'll be Theresa May will be able to go back a few times and win it. And I think they were gobsmacked at the end of it.
Is it fair enough to say that yours is a minority voice here?
Oh, very much so. What has happened has morphed into an Anglo-Irish spat. And when an Anglo-Irish spat comes about, there is a natural knee-jerk ethnic reaction in myself as well as everybody else to wear the green jersey and to stand with our own people. The things I say, I don't say them out of any great pleasure, but I think the alternate view has got to be articulated, and I honestly believe it has more validity than the sort of current uniformity of views right across the political spectrum. So I think we're now into a game of chicken where we just wait for the other person to blink, and that's a dangerous thing.